Okay, recorder's on. This is World Affairs Monthly, and I have Mr. Ari Ben-Menashe on the line. He is a friend of mine, I confess. I like him a lot. He's a former Israeli military intelligence guy in the 70s and 80s. He did get into some trouble, but he wrote an excellent book, a memoir about it, which I've mentioned before. Anyway, Ari, it's great to have you on the line. We were just talking before I turned the recorder on that about 40 years ago, I had a very bad feeling about the United States, the trajectory we were on, and I just told you the United States is going to be destroyed. Well, it's not really going to be destroyed. It's destroying itself. And so I was explaining that the bourgeois life, which is fantastic, you know, you build it up, and maybe the Europeans, Western Europeans, they had the Alps protecting them, you know, and the Chinese had to build a wall to keep the Mongol hordes out, you know, so on. And we know that Eurasian steppes and the swamps, it's Ukraine, where, you know, it was all overrun by invading armies all the time. And so you have that physical barrier. We had it in America, Western Hemisphere, et cetera, et cetera. So the audience can understand that. Now, I tend to think that we're on a trajectory that's going to be very hard to reverse. But you were going to just tell me, you were going to comment. So I'm sorry.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I was about to tell you that Vladimir Putin should apply for the job of the director of the CIA. He sort of did what many directors and many presidents of the United States were unable to do for the United States.
Yeah.
First of all, he got everybody in the U.S. sort of
riled up.
The two parties are sort of working together
right now.
That's number one.
Okay.
Number two, the Europeans are now all with the United States. They're all now, NATO is pulling together.
Yeah.
They're
okay. He's unified the ranks.
They're willing to put 2% of their GDP in arms, buying them from the U.S.
Right.
And he got Russia in a really bad situation with all these sanctions and everything else against them.
Okay.
I promise you, Mr. Putin did one of the stupidest things possible for himself and for his country to go into Ukraine, which doesn't really have any value for him or for anybody else. It was probably egged on by the United States, I would say so.
I don't think he did a stupid thing. I think he probably did have relatively little choice if he wanted to preserve what they had in the Soviet Union, or post-Soviet Union Russia. He had to kind of defend the borders. And, NATO, right? Because
I understand what everybody's saying. He had to say that NATO couldn't get closer and so on and so forth. If I were him, I would have joined the European Union, and I would have joined NATO.
But,
the problem with it is like this.
Yeah.
Mr. Putin came to power.
First,
he was prime minister in 1998. Then he became president later on.
Yeah.
And it was with a promise to bring...
The bourgeois life.
To bring the bourgeois life. I don't like to call it democracy because it's not that.
Yeah, forget that.
Whatever it is.
The higher living standards.
The higher living standards of Europe and America and whatnot to Russia.
Okay.
That was his promise.
Okay. Yeah.
And.
Well, he did. Go ahead. Yeah.
The only way for him to have done it was to join Europe.
True.
And maybe he was shunned away by some of the American politicians because they needed an enemy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
But he should have been more careful. He could have joined Europe. He could have, because most, Europe needs his natural resources, the Russian natural resources.
It's a part. And, it could be a partnership.
That's correct.
Yeah.
But he didn't do it. He didn't understand it. I promise you, he had no understanding of the West and how to do it.
Right.
He could have done it quietly, but he didn't understand.
You know, Ari, I think you make a strong argument, but I would say I'm not going to defend Putin and his decision. And the, you know, not just Putin, of course, but I would say this, you know, in the 1400s in Western Europe, there was actually at that time, almost 20% of the population was in a kind of a bourgeois situation, meaning they were a professional class, they had skills, they were building stuff, you know, they had knowledge, they were dealing in information. You know who I'm talking about, right? Sort of like an upper middle class. So it's really smart people, and they were competent. All right, now, if you went east at that time, the further east you got and that went into the steppes and the swamps and the Ukraine, you know, you had very little of a bourgeois life. In fact, even in 1690, when the British created Royal Society and they also created Bank of England, there was a very strong bourgeois life in Britain, right? In France, in all of Western Europe, but not in Russia. So I'm thinking that basically these people, they're Slavs, and the Germans, you know, probably people you don't like very much, the Bavarian Germans, the Nazi Party, they had a very low opinion of the Slavs because they said, look, they are going for this Bolshevism, and they did go for it. And the Germans, Hitler and his colleagues said, you know, we can't tolerate that. And they fell for Bolshevism. So I'm just going to say, Ari, I agree with you, but I don't think it was in the I don't think it was in their brains to think that, hey, we can be bourgeois, because they're not. They're really not.
But this was
what
their promise.
What do you think
promise.
Of that?
They're not. I totally agree.
So
Russia is not bourgeois. It can't. But this was the promise Putin made to his people.
Yes.
At least he should have tried. Now, I want to say something.
Okay, yes.
The former president of Ukraine, Yanukovych, who was pro-Russian.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
Okay, he was chased away. If he was more careful.
Yeah.
And if he would have agreed with the European Union to have just one thing, they wanted visa-free travel to Europe.
Right.
All this wouldn't have happened because the Ukrainians weren't dying to join NATO or thing. They wanted visa-free travel to Europe because just across the border from Western Ukraine, there's Poland. Mm-hmm. They're all related, and they all used to go back and forth to work there.
Sure.
Okay?
Sure.
All he had to do was that. Nothing else.
I agree.
And things would have gone, I think. You know,
but you know, it's interesting.
I really think he did something really stupid, which puts Russia back and puts Ukraine back.
Well, you know,
and actually strengthens the West against them.
Right. Now, you are not Ashkenazi Jew. You are Sephardic Jew.
No.
Right.
Correct.
I don't have that much intricate knowledge of the history of Ashkenazi or Sephardic. But I do know that the population of Ashkenazi Jew, you know, German Jew, European Jew, was relatively small in history, and the Sephardic Jew was really large compared to by comparison. And it was only because of the Western European industrial, you know, our intelligence, we built things, and built the Royal Society, et cetera. We went around the world, we had knowledge. Because of our living standards rising so fast compared to the Ottoman Empire living standards, you know, the Ashkenazi Jew population exploded. But what I'm going to propose to you is that there's something maybe deficient about the Slavs, but there's always something deficient about the Ashkenazi Jews. Now, you're talking to me, which is amazing. I think it's great, you know. And by the way, Sephardic Jew Patrick Seal was a friend of mine. Patrick Seo, biographer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, friend, great guy. I know. Great guy. Really great guy. And I could always talk to him, but I can't really talk to Ashkenazi Jews because there's something, I don't know, there's something off. Yeah. But what I'm trying to say here is that you can't really change people too much, you know, in your lifetime. And they know what they know. And the problem I see is that George Kennan, these eminent people, even Ashkenazi Jew Henry Kissinger, many prominent guys in America said, hey, NATO shouldn't be too aggressive. You know, these are the Slavs. Take it easy, right? Like you. But no one listened to him, right? So, and furthermore, look at what happened with China. Deng Xiaoping, Ari, and I'm going to stop my speech here in a second, but Deng Xiaoping pulled it off, right? He convinced his colleagues, Han Chinese, and they're not really, there was no bourgeoisie in Han China forever, you know, ever and ever. There were never any bourgeois. Okay, so they had a very different way of life, and he pulled it off. But, you know, it's like a miracle, see? And today China is really kind of a little nascent bourgeoisie, right? And they're doing pretty damn well. So it's not really clear that the Slavs can't be brought on board. Like you say, they probably can, but we just need to be pretty damn careful about it and patient.
Correct.
What, you agree?
Correct.
For example, I'm going to say something really wild and outrageous, but you have a lot of money. I don't. But if I guarantee you, if you and I went over to talk to Putin and his advisors, I think you and I might be instrumental in pulling off a deal. I don't want to call it a deal because Trump likes to use that word, but pulling off some sort of an arrangement, organizing it such that, all right, let's cool down and let's play it by ear, but let's cool down. And that's all we would need to do. You there?
Yeah, I'm there. Yeah. I want to say
something. Yeah, go ahead.
You know, it's Crimea and the Donbass.
You're fading. I don't. Something wrong with the telephone. Yeah.
Okay. I'm saying if Crimea and the Donbass would have stayed inside Ukraine.
Yeah.
And they had an election with everybody participating,
right?
The pro-Russians might have had won a parliament.
Okay.
They might have had a majority in parliament.
Okay.
Now, these are things that Mr. Putin did not understand, could not understand.
Right, right. Okay, we understand that. But the fact is, Deng Xiaoping...
But somebody... Yes. Okay.
Deng Xiaoping didn't have a parliament to debate. And are you there? I'm having a problem with the phone.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
I'm here.
He didn't worry about it. They had a dictatorship. See?
Okay.
Don't you think that makes a difference?
Of course it makes a difference. But Mr. Putin should have understood that in... Ukraine, there was some sort of parliamentary arrangement. So if he would have gone along with it, he might have still been in control of Ukraine right now.
Okay.
Without fighting.
Okay.
Without fighting and being friendly with the West.
All right.
So on and
yeah,
so forth.
It's possible.
I know.
No, I respect your opinion. I think that's correct.
All I'm saying is that it was egged on by the Americans, especially by the Democrats.
Yeah.
And he was egged on.
Yes.
He fell in the trap. He fell into the trap. And now he has to find a way to get out of it. And get out of this trap. And right. I don't think they want to let him go. I think they want to keep him in fighting for
a
while.
Yeah.
Until he destroys himself personally and maybe the Russian experiment that he made. I believe it's the last days of Putin.
I see. I'm going to predict that Putin does fine, and 10 years from now he'll be still alive, and the West will have, yeah.
I don't agree with you.
Okay.
Completely.
Let's go.
Okay. I think Putin is gone.
Yeah.
Give him a year and he's gone.
Really?
And, you know, you know what was very, very interesting? I don't know if you saw this. This picture kept on popping up again and again on CNN and on the other channels with Putin sitting behind a table.
Yeah.
With lots of Aeroflot stewardesses around him.
Right.
You saw that picture?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. That sums it up all.
You're saying that the ladies had a face that was sort of a little worried?
No, the ladies had a face. He was trying to tell everybody that... that everything will be all right. See, I'm with the girls.
Yeah, and the ladies didn't look too comfortable.
No.
Right,
no, no.
Right.
But hold on a second.
Yeah,
hold on a second.
Yeah.
Putin also is totally isolated, and I believe, I also believe that he lost it. Personally, he lost it.
All right.
It? Okay?
Okay.
One of the reasons... he lost it, and why I brought this subject up.
Yeah.
Russians do not publicly get divorced.
Okay.
They might want to leave their wives or whatever.
Right. They don't make a big deal about it. They just separate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Putin had a public divorce.
Right. I see.
Yes, and... well, it was public. Everybody knew.
Well, it's bound to be public since he's the head of state.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
But then that was all because he had this young... he was totally in love with this young gymnast.
Okay, right.
And she left him.
Oh, yeah.
She
I see.
Want,
I see. Oh, yeah. She left him. Okay, yeah.
She didn't want to be with, quote-unquote, this old man.
Okay,
yes?
Okay.
She was in her early 20s.
Right.
Okay. Now, I believe after that incident...
he changed.
He changed completely.
Okay. Well, they say about it, they say the same thing about Stalin, right? I think Stalin had the same experience. His wife died. His wife died, and he apparently, some historians argue that he changed. He was in love with her. He was devoted to her.
Well, I don't know if she committed suicide or he shot her.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But he was, he changed.
Yeah.
Historically speaking.
Okay.
And Putin really changed here.
Okay.
And this was in the last few years. And he really lost it.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and
now,
what?
Okay. I think that's I like the argument. I mean, I'm not saying I agree with you, but how about if I put this spin on the argument? I'm going to say that, you know, again, I go back to this bourgeois trend, right? The Romans started it, right? And Greeks started it. Romans carried it on. Pretty impressive, right? Amazing. Who can build the Pantheon? Not many people, right? They did it. All right. Mm-hmm. They built these aqueducts, et cetera. Everybody knows. Mm-hmm. Now, it peters out. You know, it goes down. And then you have this really kind of disorganized, crazy life, poverty. No literacy yet. All right, now, then you have people that understand that the bourgeois life is so potentially unstable, like the Chinese, Han Chinese, you know, like others, the Arabs, right? The Sunni Arabs, right? Even the Shia Arabs. They don't want bourgeois. Nothing about bourgeois attracts them. Nothing.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
All right. And you and I know that. Now, the Jews who are living in this Ottoman Empire, your ancestors couldn't have been too fun, right? And in fact, when the Western way of life, bourgeois life, infected, and I'm going to use that word, infected Eastern Europe and into the steppes, you know, Eurasian steppes, and the Pale of the Settlement Jews, you know, these marginalized people, they're totally fucked, I'm going to use bad language, they were totally fucked up, right? Totally screwed over. They began to realize, hey, this bourgeois life. No, but even they're not really bourgeois. So I'm just going to say that right now we have two powers Han Chinese and the Slavs. The Han Chinese have this manufacturing, they're like robots, you know, they just make everything, right? And holy shit, it's very impressive. You know, you can't scoff at it, right? It's damn impressive. I mean, you and I could go over there and we say, hell, good job. All right. Then you have your Slavs, and you know, they're okay. I mean, they're not bourgeois, but you know, they have these resources, natural wealth. So you have these two groups of people rising, and you have the bourgeois world maybe going into its down cycle, right? That's what I think.
Okay.
That's what I think. Now, if we're careful, if you and I are kind of, you know, able to do our thing, which is what we've been doing since we were young men, we kind of, you know, weasel our way in and start to make our arguments, and you can usually get people to respond.
Correct.
You usually can. I believe we can. Now, you're Sephardic. I'm Scottish and maybe Greek or Albanian, you know, but Christian, right? And we know what the deal is. Well, I don't want to use that word. We know what the situation is. And if we don't rescue the bourgeoisie from its, you know, diseases that it's got, right, these terminal diseases, we're going to be faced with the two non-bourgeoisie, actually savages. Savages. Yeah,
well,
I'm going to say it. They're savages. Yeah. Now, the Han Chinese have something going for them. They did build that wall, which I've seen, I've been to. You know, they build that wall to keep, but the Mongol hordes ruled over the entire Slavic area for about 100 years, back about 1,000 years ago. Genghis Khan, the son of Genghis Khan. So they raped and they, you know, they're just not very civilized. They're not fucking bourgeois. So you and I have an obligation to make sure that we can at least try to organize something so that both parties don't destroy everything. Because bourgeois is going down. Definitely, you know, we don't have any resources here left in the Western Hemisphere, Ari. We're dealing with peak oil. Tide oil is finished, pretty much finished. So we have consumed 20 million barrels a day, and we only produce 10 million. So we have to import. And these Ashkenazi Jews don't even talk about that. You know, all they want to do is usury. Here's another thing I want to bring up. The usury system goes on and on and on. Hey, it could be pretty cool, you know, because you build up fast. But it implodes. The debt service cost of the United States government is now about 15% or 16% of hard cash revenue. We're going to go in default. So I'm not sure you're arguing something very persuasive that the Slavs are kind of fucked up and they're not bourgeois. I totally agree. But you know what, Ari, our way of life here, our bourgeois life is in jeopardy because of what we're doing.
I hear you.
Yeah, I know you agree. So what do we do about it? Frankly, I think I'm not kind of half-joking, but I'm telling you, Putin and his guys would probably listen to us. They probably would. But the problem is, I'm not sure the Ashkenazi Jews who totally rule the United States, control everything, I'm not sure they would listen. Now, you're Sephardi, so you're listening. In fact, Eric Zemmour, Sephardi in France, he's worried about it too. And look at what he's saying. You see?
I'm listening.
Yeah, because the Sephardi Jew is not infected with this, I don't know what it is, you know, it's like a higher level Roma. I don't know. You got to be honest. To build the Roman Empire, you had to be honest. To build structures like they did, to build the aqueducts, to do what they did, to build the Pantheon, to do everything, you have to be honest. You have to have integrity. And if you don't have sufficient integrity, you're not going to do anything. Take, for example, World War II. I'll finish my speech in a second. World War II is a perfect example. The Bolshevik Revolution, total madness, right? And Zinoviev, this guy, Ashkenazi Jew and a colleague of Lenin, close friend of Ashkenazi Jew, they were trying to bring Bolshevism to Germany. And in fact, I think there were two coups in the early 20s. Came very close. And the Germans, Bavaria, said, fuck this. We're not going to tolerate this. So actually, you could explain Hitler and the guys in the Nazi Party as a retaliation for what was happening in the Slavic area. And look at the Japanese. We opened them up with this, you know, gunboat diplomacy in the mid 19th century, right? Right. We went over there and said, hey, fuck you. You know, we open them up. Before you know it, they respond and they do pretty well. But they're not bourgeois, and they attacked us, not realizing that we had crude oil coming out of our butthole. And the Germans did the same thing. They got a really big hard on, thinking, okay, they got to take care of their problem, not realizing that we have crude oil. They were not bourgeois. The Nazi Party was not bourgeois. They were funded by the bourgeois. They were funded, man. I mean, it's unbelievable. Yeah. But they weren't bourgeois. So that's my point. I think that we're now circling back to what was happening in the 20s, 30s, 40s, and we're now faced with this problem, like you just identified brilliantly. We are facing non-bourgeois people who are getting really a big hard-on. I'm sorry to say it like that. I mean, they're getting really pissed.
That's right. Anyway,
so
Tom.
All right. Well, what do you, make your final statement? I don't. You want to go?
I know. I'm fine. Good. To you.
No, I mean, what? I wanted to look. I mean, give me your reaction.
I listened to you.
Yeah. Okay. I think we have a very serious problem. Look, I hear you. I think the Slavs are fucked up. I've been there. I went there in 1986. Yeah.
I see.
Yeah, I've been there. Did you go to the Soviet Union when it existed?
Mm-hmm. I was there.
Okay, so you know what it's like, right? I mean, did it shock you?
Anyway, yeah. I will talk to you soon.
All right.
Okay, thanks.
Good to talk to you, Ari. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.